Welcome to Coffee and Therapy, where we spill the tea on therapy-related topics, sip our favorite coffee, and share our expertise with parents, professionals, clinicians, and anyone who could benefit from a little therapy. Welcome back to Coffee and Therapy, and it's me, Alyssa, and our super special guest that you listened to last episode, Shelly.
Hey!
Yay! We are so psyched. Well, I am so psyched because it's just me of the Therapy crew, but we needed to have Shelly back for a part two, and it was only Shelly and I that could really make it happen, and you know what? That's just how life works sometimes. Mm-hmm. We're going through the busy day, being therapists, being supervisors, being business owners, being grad students, all those things. Jeez, that's a lot of check boxes we tick off.
Right, that's a lot of list right there.
Yeah, I'm tired. But this is just such important information we need to get out to you. And there is a whole side of the AAC discussion we didn't get to last time that was sort of the prompt for this, was AAC and mental health and mental well-being and how mental health practitioners and people who maybe aren't familiar with devices could expand that knowledge to provide more accessible access. Is that redundant? Therapy services, accessible access. So Shelly, I think we referred to this, that she gave us this awesome brain dump. So we're going to try to hit all the points that we didn't get to last time. So I'll let you just kind of kick it off wherever your brain feels like, Shelly, with that topic, and we'll just roll from there.
Yeah, so one of the things I hear from a lot of parents is like safety skills. And not safety skills as in look both ways before you cross the street, but as in my child is out with their therapist sometimes. What happens if they get separated? They have no way to even call me, let alone get help from somebody. And or like what happens in case of if a family member has an emergency, or just all of these emergency skills. So one of the first things that I program into every device that I work with is a button on their personal page that says, I am using a device to communicate. Please give me time. And this button, I think, is just so important for everybody to have, because AAC does take time. It takes a while to type out your message, and we are not a patient society unless we are told to be patient. So go ahead and give them the opportunity to say that. And it can be in a matter of, I called 911, and if you've ever called 911, they move fast. We're grateful for it, but they move fast. It's 911, where are you located? And you have to rattle off your address, and if you don't rattle it off quick, they're going to ask you again.
Yeah.
Which, in the sphere of 911, that's incredible. Thank you for being diligent and making sure I'm good. But for an AAC user, they don't have that kind of time. So they can call 911 and the first thing they press is, I'm using a device to communicate. Please give me time. And we literally run scenarios in therapy where maybe the therapist calls me and I play 911 dispatcher. Or we just do a mock call with them, depending on what that client needs. And we show them like, okay, they're going to ask for your location. Here is your address programmed in. They're going to ask for a phone number. Here's your phone number programmed in. They need to know what your emergency is. Here's how you get to that page.
Yeah. And that button, the I'm using a device to communicate, please give me time, can seem so redundant until you give that scenario that it's like, I have to use this. And the reality of our society of like able to see, like, I am using an iPad, but a lot of people walk around with iPads. So saying like, this is my communication system, it's speaking on my behalf, please give me time to type and process everything I want to share with you. I think we always have this pitfall where we shouldn't have to disclose and we shouldn't have to advocate the way that we do for things. But there is also reality to our current society that we need to set people up for the best success in where they're going out to, because they may not always be going into inclusive spaces. And sadly, people just are not competent or well-versed in AAC. I did a presentation to parents of a variety of children with disabilities, disabled children, and they were unfamiliar with AAC just because if it's not in their child's purview, they have enough to worry about. So people may have seen that written and been like, oh, that's so silly. Of course you're using a device to communicate. You are using it with me right now. Well, what if they can't see you? What if you're on Zoom? What if you're calling into 911? I never even thought about that.
Yeah. I love that button because even one of the first things I learned about an AAC is we all have that one person in our life who just like cuts us off and tries to like finish sentences for us. And for us who can't
hear words,
stop that. So like I'm trying to tell you about my day at the, and I can't remember my word, and you're like, oh, your day at the office. No, it was my day at the, oh, your day when you went home. No, it's my day at the beach. And you're like, beach? Why are we talking about the beach? I don't know, because I wanted to share it with you. So like we all have that little friend who cuts us off. And a lot that happens to our AAC users where we think we're being helpful because it does take some time to write out a message on the device that we think we're being helpful by finishing their sentence, but we're not. And that gets frustrating. So cue button, I'm using a device to communicate, please give me time.
Or even like in those situations, like I need an extra minute, right? Like even a phrase that's like, clearly you're standing in front of me and I'm using my device. Hey, like, give me a minute. I can't find what I'm looking for. Give me a minute.
Yeah. Those real like self-advocacy phrases, we want them. I advocate for having them in one spot too. Yeah. And depending on the user, you can also program devices so that it doesn't pop up in the message window. So that if I've already started building my sentence or my message to you and you're cutting me off or I can't find something, it will speak, I'm using a device to communicate, please give me time, or will speak, give me a minute, I can't find what I'm looking for, but it won't add it to the message window. So once I do finish the rest of my message I was trying to initially say, I can click that message bar and it says the intended original message only.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. What system is that?
So I know you can do it in Tobii Dynavox. You can do it in...
AAC clattering all around, listeners.
Yes. Throwing a pencil in the process. You can do it in Lamp Words for Life. I'm going to open...
Awesome.
HoloQuota Go right now and open their settings, but I would assume you could do it in any of the robust apps.
Yeah. Well, I think it's helpful too to kind of talk through. I think a lot of people we're very familiar, right, with the general concept of AAC and it being there. And this is someone's voice and how to respect that autonomy, right? In episode one, we kind of went through some of those basics and then some food for thought and diving into it. I think we all don't always know how deeply programmable these machines are and how intelligent they are as technology has progressed, right? Like when I started out a decade ago, AAC did not look like this. And now all of the knowledge we have, whoo, it's amazing.
Yeah. I have a therapist who they had somebody who had a Dynavox and they aren't using it at all. So the therapist brought it for me to look at. And I call it the dinosaur because this thing is chunky. Like,
oh, I know that Dynavox.
Uh-huh. It's heavy. And oh my stars, is it not portable?
Yeah,
But it's what they used.
If
it worked for them, then it worked.
It's also what, for our clients that have high sensory or low feedback, low tactile feedback, so they are high sensory seekers, and an iPad may not be as indestructible as their sensory bodies need. Mm-hmm. I find that's when I see those big chunky Dynavoxes because it can withstand the pressure that someone's going to put on it, or that if they're dysregulated that they might, you know, target that device during dysregulation, whereas an iPad screen will crack. Mm-hmm. So that's when I see those dinosaur Dynavoxes the most mm-hmm. used. Like we have a friend who still uses that system and it's the first system that was ever given to them and they're younger, and it's just because they don't have regulation of their fine motor or their gross motor right now with their sensory needs.
Yeah. With that, there is the Tobii Dynavox i110 series that is smaller than the dinosaurs that were out when Tobii first came out, but still super durable. The case itself is thick, and then it has a rubber case with it. And then if needed, you put the key guard, which is basically a grid over the buttons to help isolate your fingers more. And then this like plastic piece that goes around the rim of it that helps hold everything in one place together. And those things are a little bit heavy, but you can drop them and throw them and things happen. And for people who don't have that regulation ability always, they it serves them really well.
Yeah, that's great to know. I put a note too, so we can have it in the show notes. I'll look up if there's a link to it.
Yeah. So I'm playing in the apps as we're talking, and particularly I know for any that I have played with, PRC apps, your touch chat, lamp, all the categories within those. When you go to edit a button, there's a button label and there's a button message. And then even there's alternate pronunciation. So the button label, it literally shows up on the button, like, you know, Shelly. But the button message, I could make, my name is Shelly. And then alternate pronunciation, we have the grocery store Meijer here, and it calls it Majeur. Sure. And families don't always know that you can program it to say it correctly. So the button message and label are spelled correctly.
Now I just want to call it Majeur.
Right. I'm going to Majeur. Yes.
It sounds it's like Target.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. Amazing. Yes. For those that don't have a Meijer, it's Meijer. Mm-hmm. So it's spelled like Majeur, but not how we say it. Yes. Right.
So then in alternate pronunciation, you can type in my, M-Y, space, E-R, and it says Meijer.
Yep.
That's not how you spell it. That's not how you want it to show up in the system, but you can program it to do that.
That's awesome. It just, the amount we can do.
Yeah.
And along the lines of self-advocacy, one of the bullet points we have here, and I think really is in line with these quick button responses, is regulation phrases so that we can advocate before dysregulation. Mm-hmm. Because I think that is the hardest part of AAC, is that when our users are learning, just like we were learning how to do anything new, it's frustrating. Like, I didn't just get on a bike and ride it. I did not. I am not an athletic person. So it took me a long time. I was a late in stage life bike learner. I fell. I was so mad about it. It was not a fun process. So I like akin to that for me is AAC of this is a really difficult thing. Likely our clients who are using AAC or people who are users have motor planning needs that is limiting their access to spoken word already. So it's sometimes impacting the way our motor plans are working. And I think there's this default of just drill. And then that causes dysregulation and that reinforced negative relationship with the device. So when I saw this bullet point, I was like, yes, if the first thing we taught them was self-advocacy phrases of I'm using a device, it takes me a longer time, or like, please stop, I need a minute. Like, let me think. So I'll let you take it away because, you know, I'm the friend who likes to cut everyone off.
Yes. So when we're starting with AAC, we use the most motivating thing for people. So if they really love, my last person really loves Wheel of Fortune. Great. Going on the system. I really like chocolate muffins from Trader Joe's. Great. That's going on my system. Or like whatever it is, if it's not on there, we get it on there within the first like session of getting this device, because you don't want to talk about math because I don't like math. I want to talk about chocolate muffins. But what we don't think about is that self-advocacy and having the ability to say, no, stop, can be their most motivating thing. So Talking with Tech had a podcast that was talking about this, and their example was that somebody had low motor ability to control their own body. And so people would just touch them and manipulate them as what they saw needed, but as the individual saw as harmful, and being like, stop touching me. And we know to ask consent. However, that often gets bypassed when we're like, oh, well, they can't do it, so I'm going to help them do it. So one of the things the speech therapist programmed on there was, I do not like it when you touch me. I do not like it when you touch me. And what they did was they ended up going around to all of the teachers and the paras and pressing that button and then looking at them. I do not like it when you touch me. And they'd look at them like, ha, do you hear me now? Stop it. I just love that. I'm like, why?
Love that. Yes. I was just in a supervision today talking about prompt hierarchy and how in schools, I feel like a lot of people are really quick to go to that most restrictive, most dependent prompt tier, which is full physical prompt or even partial physical prompt. And we do it without assent and consent. And we do it, I think, for good intention. So then someone being like, I do not like it when you touch me. And just reinforcing that of like, I'm a sentient being who feels everything and has thoughts. Remember, my words aren't here all the time in the way that you're used to having words. And my body doesn't do what I want it to do. And I'm working on my cognitive motor control, but it is still my body. What a thought.
Right?
Mind blowing.
Yes. So what words do they need on there to be able to promote their own autonomy? Is it, I do not like it when you touch me? Is it, I need some space? Is it, it's too loud in here? Is it, I need my headphones? I need squeezes? In the spirit of too much information, potentially, I like it when people lay directly on top of me. I know it looks funny. However,
I already knew this, Shelly.
Like, however, it is a very specific sensory experience that a weighted blanket does not cover, because it is somebody's body and all the heavy parts of your body on all the heavy parts of my body. And I just get squished. And that is one of the few things that if I am super dysregulated, that is one of the only things that can bring me back down in like a matter of a couple minutes. And then I'm good. And I might be good for the next long time.
If it makes you feel better, it's on an episode of Grey's Anatomy when Amelia is pregnant with Link's baby. She calls it gravity blanket and says, I need some gravity blanket, and has him lay on top of her. And then one day he's really dysregulated and she's like, do you want some of this? And he's like, this is amazing. So you know what? Same. And I think knowing our sensory preferences, and that's something that's important, right? Is what are the sensory profiles and sensory needs of our clients? Because I think even I'm very hands-on with kids when it's appropriate and there's assent and consent and we need that proprioceptive input and we really need that regulation. But there may be someone who's not showing me physically that they do hate that. And then one day they come back and they're like, Miss Alyssa, I don't like being touched. I'm like, oh, snap. Like, you never showed me that. And it seemed really helpful for your body.
Right.
So having those all programmable and even having a page of it, I can think of one client and their parent listens to this podcast, so they'll know who they are. But they, when they're dysregulated, it's hard because, right, our kids sometimes use different codes and like, is it a gestalt, right? Is it just a plan and a pattern? Because that's a whole thing for AAC, where when they were dysregulated, they would press 10. They would go to numbers and press 10. And 10 could have been like, I don't like that. I'm bored. I'm dysregulated. So we were always trying to problem solve, like, what is 10? Like, I want to help you assign meaning to this that everyone can know. So sometimes it was a countdown backwards from 10 to like do deep breathing. So I made a song for it. Sometimes it was, I don't know what you're asking of me. And then saying, I'm asking it in a different way. But like a page that maybe could have opened up when they pressed 10 would have been so helpful of like 10. And then like the number 10 could be the whole top row, because sometimes you just want to say 10. Mm-hmm. But if then it could also open to a page of like, I need countdown. I need Mickey Mouse song, because there was a Mickey Mouse song that had that, of just like, how do we help infer that meaning for them and show them all the options that are there?
Right. And with that, we have to teach that that's how we've programmed it at a time where they're not dysregulated, because when we're dysregulated, we cannot be taught at that time. So teaching them that, you know, I'm going to press Mickey Mouse song and then I'm going to play Mickey Mouse song and here's how you get to it on your system is important. And then talking through, so when you need me to count down from 10, you go here, 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 and preferably have them do the motor plan to get there, have them touch the system. But if they're not on board with that yet, because they don't really know what I'm saying, I can touch the system and say, when you press this, I will 10, 9, 8, I will start counting backwards for you. I just, this last hour, programmed a specific needs board for somebody, and some SLP category AAC people are going to cringe at this, but this is what they needed. So cringy, I'm sorry. It has eat and drink, not on the eat and drink page. And it has watch TV and go for a walk. I know, gasp. And I think we're going to program one other thing and didn't quite get to it yet. But we programmed all of those on the board, literally says need. So when he is screaming and you're like, why are you screaming? Yeah. He can press eat. And then it links to the food page.
I was just going to say, can it go to multiple pages?
Yeah, it can.
Like, can you have eat in multiple places too? So it's on the quote unquote regular board and then also on this needs board.
Yes.
Okay.
Within systems. So
got it.
If the system is built off of a motor plan, do like not lamp. Have multiple, right, lamp or Toby Dynavox motor plan set. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You don't want multiple, you don't want the same word in multiple places.
Yeah.
They are using Toby Dynavox aphasia set. So it doesn't matter that there's words found in other places, yeah, or the same word in multiple places. Particularly because it's then linking back to this other page.
Sure.
For something like LAMP or Toby Motor Plan, I'm going to teach and maybe ask them I'm going to teach it first, but mid dysregulation melt, I'm going to say, point to it. Do you need something to eat? Do you need something to drink? And I'm going to point as I go to be like, this right here, is it what you need? No. Is this right here what you need? No. And this one, and really help them as much as possible.
Yeah. Two important things you're saying here. I mean, number one, it's not perfect, right? LAMP and the Toby Dynavox motor plan are set the way they are for such a specific purpose, yes, that then switching that could do more of a disservice than be helpful. For those that don't, great, you have this option to have things in multiple places, to make a needs board, to switch up how it's programmed. Cool, you've got pros and cons of both sides. You're also saying programming, and you're programming it. So I'm very curious, Shelley, one of the things that we have on here too is like, don't assume someone else is going to do it. I think we talk about that all the time in the context of music therapy, right? We always want a music therapy page. We always want more instruments. We always want more things. How, and maybe this like needs to be a video, how do we program? How do we have access to do that? Because I think that has always been my biggest limiting thing is, I know exactly what we could put on here to help you, but I have no idea how to do it.
You take my course that's coming out soon.
So, and we'll link to you again in the show notes for sure.
Hey. So for real, that is one of the biggest questions. And when creating this course, it's actually the last part that I need to program. I'm going to go through the major AAC apps, your ProLoquo2Go, TouchChat, LAMP Words for Life, Toby Dynavox, and the different sets in Toby Dynavox. Of how do I program this, because somebody else isn't going to do it, or they're going to program it in a way that you did not intend them to, because they don't necessarily understand the like purpose of what you're doing, which is
right.
It's not their fault.
Yes.
So most times there is an edit tool It is typically found in the top right-hand corner on a lot of systems. ProLoquo, it's bottom right-hand corner. And it's like a gear or a pencil or sometimes a gear and pencil, but it's some type of that. And typically you want to navigate to the page that you want to edit first, then press that edit button, and then you can click on what it is you need to edit. Mm-hmm. It's not hard work. It is sometimes intricate work in like LAMP does not always auto-populate. The button message is where you type it in first. So the button label and then button message will sometimes auto-populate and sometimes doesn't. LAMP, if you're listening to this, why does it do that? Please make it stop. But why it's not speaking is sometimes not understood until you know that, oh, well, the button message is how it speaks. That is what the system knows to say. And so you edit it from there. So it's not hard, but it does take a little bit of a nuance to it. And that's definitely one of the things I wanted to cover.
And it's tedious. I think there's a reality too when we say, like, can you program this? Everything takes time, and we all are doing a lot, right? Like Shelley and I said when we first got on, we're all checking a lot of boxes in our daily life. Not one of us is just sitting around like, oh, gee, I wish I had less time to just do whatever I want.
Not a nice one.
So I think if we can even bring that into session of, hey, we're going to work on programming three things together today and showing our user and doing it together. If that's your first 5 to 10 minutes of session, that's so purposeful. Mm-hmm. And I think we forget that that can be a really beneficial, important part of therapy and go through it.
Yes. And I love that you're showing the individual how to program their own device, because that is so powerful. I have a kiddo with selective mutism who uses LAMP Words for Life, and that was one of the things that we taught him how to do. And so there are times where he can tell me the song he wants to sing verbally, and there are times where he wants to sing it so badly but can't access his voice at that time, and it's not programmed onto the device. So what he does is he programs it in that moment. He programs a new button on his music page, and then he'll sometimes look at me and like, we need to pull up a specific picture and maybe he needs help with that. But he's already typed in the button label and message. I want to sing Gaston's song. I want to sing Pirates of the Caribbean, whatever it is. And that is so powerful for him to say, I don't have access to my voice at this moment. This is what I want. It's not on my device. I'm going to put it on my device.
Yep. I mean, and one of the things we have on this list that I'm like, we got to hit everything on this list that we made is not limiting language because you think it'll be easier. Programming those phrases, right? Of, I want to sing the Gaston song. It's okay if the button says a whole sentence. Something I was reminded of by a supervisor of mine, maybe even just a year ago, I fell into the trap I feel like a lot of us fall into when we're working with neurodivergent, specifically autistic individuals, where we're taught to keep our language simple and concrete. And then what my supervisor at the time said is, you are putting them in a deprivation chamber, a language deprivation chamber. Just like we hear those statistics of children coming from different backgrounds who are read to at different rates, have different literacy, and have been exposed to X number of different words by the time they enter school, right? That we are already set up for a disadvantage if you're not reading to your child every night. It's the same for our non-speaking autistic clients, that if we are constantly putting them in a language deprivation chamber, of course they are going to use less language. We have exposed them to less opportunities.
Yes, I am just like a bobblehead nodding. There's so much.
Video
yes.
ID.
Yes, UID, bubble. So, yes, I think two things. One is, yes, you can program phrases into the device. And I hope that was covered too in the like safety aspect of it, of maybe, you know, my mom is diabetic, she needs an ambulance. There's not time to type out that whole message. One button, boom. And honestly, I'd even program that into a system that's not made for phrases. Most of them, this is kind of the second thing, are not made for phrases. There are phrases to them, But what I don't want y'all to hear me say is program all phrases into the system, or to program over buttons. So I don't want them to just say want. I want them to always say, I want to eat. And so I programmed I want and eat, or over the eat button, now all they can say is I want to eat, and they don't have access to that one word eat. And I do that for names as well. So mom, we could program over the button to say mom with mom's picture. But what if in school they're asked who this character is in the book? Mm-hmm. Well, they don't want my mother to come up because it's not their mom. It's, you know, so-and-so's mom in the book. So we still want them to have access to one word at a time.
Yes.
We can also program in specific phrases, particularly as it comes to self-advocacy, as it comes to safety, as it comes to phrases that they say a lot. My favorite hockey team is the Comets. There's no need to type that out. If that is your all-time favorite thing in life, have a button for it. One press and it says it.
Right. Yeah, you could have a favorite things page, family page, therapist and teacher page, because you still want to maybe be able to comment about therapists, teachers, mom, dad, but then you also have Miss Alyssa, Miss Shelley, and you might want to specifically say something about them. Like, I'm excited to go see Miss Alyssa later. Same with, you know, the client I was talking about with 10, maybe that's on favorite things of like 10, and it pulls up the favorite interests or favorite places, or this same client would say pool, right? They love to go to the pool. Like, I'm excited to go to the pool. I want to talk about the pool. It's winter time and I can't go to the pool and I am mad about it, right? It can mean so many things. Or like last episode, we said, go Bills. Like, you want to be able to have those commenting, phrasing things on there. Again, I will say go Birds, but.
So in the terms of go Birds, then you also don't want your go button to only say go Birds.
Yes.
Because then it's, I want to go Birds the pool today. And you're like, what does that mean? What?
Yes.
So you can have both in there. I will say too, this is common for a lot of new AAC professionals, new AAC parents, where we are projecting what we want the user to say onto them and their system. I have parents that I've worked with who this is nothing against them. They don't know better yet. We have to teach them that they're like, well, I just want them to be able to say what they want to eat, what they want to drink, what they want to play with. And the kid's not using the system. And then we add in self-advocacy things that say, stop that, go away. Would you look at that use of the system? Now they're motivated to use it. Or, you know, maybe they're not motivated to ask for those wants, but they are motivated to say, you know, put on, because I want you to put on my Barbie shoes and put on my wig and put on my Elsa dress and put on my top hat. So those words that we use in play and make believe, those might be more motivational for people, but we as professionals, adults, just get stuck in, well, I want them to say this, so that's what I'm going to target. And they're not using the device, probably because they're not motivated by what we want them to say.
Well, and a summary of a lot of what I'm hearing too, that I think is hard, right? Yes. Of a lot of AAC device use is trial and error,
yes,
is throwing things at the wall and seeing what sticks, not the literal device, but saying we're going to try and navigate these different pages and just keep modeling and modeling and inviting you to explore until you're zoomed in on that thing. And of course, you said it before, we're going to try to start with things that are motivating and interesting. That doesn't 100% mean they're bought into the device with that. We're going to try multiple things. We're going to keep modeling, keep exposing, keep inviting without demands, because it may take a year of using this device across environments and longer, right? Using this device across environments consistently with diverse people till we finally find that thing. And then one night you're just like, whoa, my kid's babbling in their room, messing around with their device, exploring all these pages. Amazing. It's okay if it takes time.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yes. AAC does take time. AAC takes time to learn. It takes time to program. It takes time to understand how it's used. It takes time to create messages on it. AAC takes time.
And all things do. Like when I tell my families, I did an Instagram reel on this a long time ago. Short-term goals, when we see a client once a week for 30 minutes to an hour, which is typically what we, both Shelly and I, are music therapists, are seeing people for. Mm-hmm. Or for AAC specific things, I'm assuming you're probably seeing them once a week. It takes 6 months for those small goals, micro goals. And usually the first 6 months is therapeutic rapport and relationship building. Just building trust, comfort in a new space, comfort with a new item, comfort with exploring instruments, supporting our regulation. It takes 2 to 3 years for these big picture goals to come to play. And I know parents are like, oh, my child got AAC. Great. They'll finally be able to communicate with me in a way that I'll better understand what they need. Yes. And that's going to take time. And I know that's hard. I know for therapists and teachers and parents, we want to help right away. And we believe that therapeutic experience is going to be so impactful. And we're so excited to see their life change. And it may take 2 years. And that is okay.
Yes, 100%. A lot of times I find when people are introduced to AAC who didn't know about it, they're like, oh my gosh, this is what I've been waiting for. Thank goodness I'm in. But they see the long-term goal, which is incredible because I want them to see the long-term goal. I want them to see that they can give entire speeches and presentations and go on podcasts all by using this device. But they are not going to get the device and start immediately using sentences, which is what a lot of adults start pushing is, okay, well, they know how to speak sentences, they understand sentences, and therefore they should use that on the device right now. And that's not realistic. We have to teach them how, and that starts by knowing how to open their device, knowing how to turn it on. If there's a like forced password on it, knowing how to unlock it, knowing how to change the volume on it when they're not heard, knowing how to press one word that they intend to communicate. There are lots of little steps that are little wins, but it takes a lot of time, and that is really challenging to allow that time.
It's a new language, mm-hmm. right? I've been working on improving my Spanish for years. I'm still not fluent because I'm not doing it every day, right? I'm not doing the things you need to do for consistency. And it's the same thing when we talk about with ABA. Like, of course, ABA is going to show an impact and change in skills and strategies. Mm-hmm. It's 20 to 40 hours a week. If I had 20 to 40 hours a week of someone through music therapy, through integrating play and AAC, I can also guarantee I will see a positive impact. Part of it is time and investment, right? When we are on a journey of health, I'll use that instead of, you know, the other words we might use. What you put in your body, how you move your body has an impact. And if you don't do it consistently, you're not going to see the expected results that you want. Same thing for AAC. It takes, or new language learning, it takes that time and consistency.
Yeah. I'm going to bring us back to a point like along those lines. And I want to add to is we can't assume that somebody else is going to do it.
Yes.
Assume that somebody else is going to put in that time to teach them the system. We can't assume that somebody else is going to teach the parents because, I mean, research and history shows that they're not. We are all waiting for somebody else to step up. We're waiting for the speech therapist to step up when they may not have training in it. They're waiting for somebody else to step up because they know that they don't know what they need to know in this case. And so they're looking for other professionals too, which is valid. But when we know better, we have to do better, and we can't assume that just because I'm the music therapist, I can't encourage the parents to get AAC training. I can't ask them, hey, has anybody showed you how to use this? Because sometimes they're like, oh yeah, my kid knows how to use it. And that's not my question. Do you know how to use this? Do your therapist know how to use this? So if not, we need that training.
Yeah.
Find it too, is hopefully the next sentence out of your mouth. But we can't assume that somebody else is going to initiate the conversation. We can't assume that somebody else is doing it because they're probably not.
Yeah. And once you do, if they say, yes, we're totally trained in it, great. Now you know and you have an answer. We're working on making a little AAC handout for our therapist that says, does your child have a device? And like have a cute little picture of a device. Please bring it to every therapy session. Please make sure it's charged. Do you use this device at home, school, other therapies, music therapy? I want to see where it's being used across modal. And then we can have a discussion around, let's bring it to everything. Do we have permission to talk with your device person? Like, are you able to program it? Something I found too is if it's a school device, it is locked and I cannot edit anything at school. So then I have to ask the school SLP, which let's say they know this device in and out. They prescribed it. They did all the assessments to give it to you. I don't know that an SLP for the entire school has the time to program in my 10 pages of instruments that I want for this client, or 10 pages of music choices. Right. I can confirm they do not. In fact.
Fact.
Yeah. So knowing what opportunities we have as well of, okay, they have this device. Great. We also have, you know, we bought TouchTat and Lamp. So great. They're a TouchTat user. Well, then for when we need music choices, because we can't edit, we know we'll have to use our device to program, to have those choices ready for them on a system that mimics theirs. So I think also opening up those dialogues, presuming competence and, you know, opening the door with curiosity and kindness is key, but getting a sense of what do they know and having a quick questionnaire that maybe you run through with them in your first few weeks of those things is so critical.
Yes. I love that. So what you're touching on is an aspect of, we call it a communication passport. One also coming to the website soon, but, it says, yeah, like this is my AAC device. This is the program it is. Cause sometimes if it's on an iPad, what program is it? I don't know. But if it's on a Tobii Dynavox dedicated device, you flip it over and you know, it's a Tobii. But like, what device is it? This is my password for it. This is who can edit my device. Or if they don't have a device, these are my gestalts and what they mean. This is my nonverbal communication. This is how I signal yes. This is how I show you no. This is how I tell you I'm sick. Because it's not all conventional. And it's amazing when we can teach that conventional yes of a head nod or no of a head shake. But it's not always easy for them to access our conventional methods, or they may just prefer theirs, and that's okay too. So having that paper that goes to school with them for a new classroom and comes to therapy with them for a new therapist that says, this is how you can communicate with me best, and that we're not leaving that up to the therapist to just figure out, or the user to have to teach us, that we can help them with that.
I love that. If it can come to the website very soon, that would help me not have to make one. And I love not having to make things.
Coming to the website by October. Get out a calendar.
Oh, and that may be, oh no, this is coming out very soon. This is coming out. We're recording this, listeners, right before it comes out, because Shelly and I said, it's AAC month. We got to make this happen for y'all. So. Beautiful.
Communication passport coming to our website by October 30th.
Amazing. I'm not going to make one then, and I will just use yours. Will it be a free resource or a paid resource, just so we can set that expectation?
It will be a paid resource, but I would like to price it low.
Sure. Hey, I really like that. I will pay a low cost to not have to use my brain power. That is where I am as a music therapist. I respect if not everyone is. Shelly gave you the layout, so you can make it on your own if you'd like to. That's amazing too.
Yes. Those are the key things that I would put in. So if you don't want to pay, again, I am not offended by that. Just scroll back a little bit, listen to that. And then I would also add in what Alyssa was talking about too, of this is where I use my system. Yeah. This is who has training in it. because then that's also going to then open a conversation for you with families. And whether you make two separate sheets for that or you make it one big packet, I don't know that it matters.
Yeah.
It's depending on what you're going to use it for, but yeah, both are very valuable for your information.
Yeah. And you may have seen too some of those like all about me things that float around at the start of the school year. I think it's also good to have a modified version of that for families, especially when we're coming from this neuroaffirming client-centered place of like, what are my strengths? What are my interests? My favorite songs and music are like, these are all things we ask in our initial client information form. Something else we ask that I'm sure is important to put in here, and opportunities for programmable things in our AAC. I show joy through, I show distress through. These are the sensory strategies and tools that help me when. And then those things can be on there. So like hand flaps, right? That's my joy. Great. I know you are loving what we're doing in music therapy. So all of these alternative communication strategies that the people we support have, it's great to just have as much of that information going in.
Yes, 100%.
Well, we're coming to the end of our time, Shelley. Is there anything we didn't hit that like, we got to leave these peeps with these nuggets?
Oh man, there's so many things. I think I'm actually scrolling our like list right now.
Yeah, me too. I think we've hit a lot of it. I think we really emphasize the self-advocacy and safety. I think that mental health is there. One point we didn't get to that I do think might be important, since we're really going to talk about like safety and self-advocacy with AAC. Mm-hmm. Calling 911 with Alexa is a bullet point you have on here that I think that is a good just tip to leave our listeners with.
Yes.
Luckily, I don't have one of those devices, so it didn't answer.
Right. So sorry. I'm about to turn on all of our devices right now. You can say, hey, Alexa, with your device. Or if you're an Apple user like me, you can say, hey, Siri, with your device. Mine just turned on. She says, mm-hmm.
I love it.
With the device. And what we then program is the device, the AAC device, to say, hey, so-and-so. And then we program the Alexa or the Siri to recognize that voice. So I know for my iPhone, I had to say, I'm not going to activate mine again, hey, so-and-so, several different times. So it recognized my voice. Do that with the device too. Yeah. Have a second on there. So then you can say, hey, so-and-so, mm-hmm, call 911.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is really powerful as well, particularly if they have a medically fragile family member, or maybe they're medically fragile themselves. The power to be able to act in those instances is huge. And to not have that power to know my favorite person, whatever, has a need right now, and I know what to do and I can't do it,
yeah,
is debilitating and potentially traumatic as well. Yeah. Yeah. So knowing some of them already have them in the system, I'm like visualizing one, and I feel like it could be Toby, has like a literal, hey, so-and-so button,
yeah,
on there already programmed in. So that, yeah, is a good thing to know.
And for Android users, it's okay, Google, which I just set off everyone's, you know, Googles in the car. So we have those three systems that are there. And I think as people age and get their own cellular device as well, they get a cell phone. I'm an iPhone user. Clearly, Shelley also is. We are Apple connected. You can hit the side button so many times to immediately dial 911, teaching that program to someone if they have the funding and access to get an Apple Watch, right? I don't know if that could even count as an AAC, if like insurance would cover things like that. But now there's a program of, if you fall, again, if you touch it on the side so many times, it will auto call 911. So then they also have access to these, I know at least last worst resort, I've got this button and I've got this access to be able to get emergency support.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely.
And I think we said it in the first episode, but the most important thing to leave it with is, because you said it, the don't assume someone else is going to do it. And also just use the AAC, like just do it. We need, try it out, experiment with it. I think, and you know, tell me if I'm wrong, Shelley, there's not harm and there's not a way to do it wrong. Obviously, if someone's pulling their device away from you and you're trying to use it, stop. That's autonomy. But if someone is okay with you touching their device, you can just say, I'm going to explore this so we can use this better in therapy.
Yes. I think a lot of times we get scared to even just touch the device. We don't want to mess up the programming. We don't want to cause harm. We don't want to mess up their learning process. And to be honest, if you're playing an editor and you don't know what you're doing, I'm going to be honest, you can mess it up. Don't play in edit mode. Don't play on those buttons. There's usually a clear differentiation. There's like a big red bar at the top, or the blank buttons suddenly show up with little plus signs on them. Like, you know that something has changed. So other than playing in edit mode when you don't really know what you're doing, you can't mess it up so bad. You're just pushing words. So yes, and it is beneficial for them to see that we don't know everything. It is beneficial for them to see us use the word finder or the search feature that is built into most devices and say, you know, we're talking about pumpkins right now. I'm sure pumpkin's on the device. I looked under the holidays page. It's not there. I'm going to use search. Oh, it's under fruits. That's cool. Now we know.
Yep. Just try it. Don't be afraid of it. Mm-hmm. Reach out to Shelly for resources. Take her course. If you're listening to this episode first, should have said at the beginning, go back to episode 1, 2. Give that a listen as well. You got lots of resources here. And give it a try and just seek that knowledge. It is so important for every therapist across the board to be expanding diverse communication use. Our world is so connected to technology. This is something that is only a positive way to bring us all closer together.
Yes, absolutely. Happy learning, everyone. It's going to be awesome.
Happy learning. And we'll tag all the places to find Shelly again in the show notes. Learn with Mainstay, Mainstay Music Therapy, Notes 2, the number 2, Live By. All of these places are great to find Shelly. We'll tag her on the Coffee and Therapy page. If you want to ask Shelly a question, DM her. I'm sure she'll get back to you.
100% on any of those pages.
There you go. But for now, bye. Bye. Thanks for listening to Coffee and Therapy. Keep the conversation flowing and follow us over on Instagram at Coffee and Therapy. Questions, thoughts, ideas? Email us coffeeandtherapy@gmail.com. We can't wait for you to listen in again soon.